I think a reason a lot of people don't go to church or they don't want to be in a place like this on Sunday mornings is because they don't want to have the church leaders or the people that go to church tell them how to live their life or help them. It's like, I don't want those people up in my business, you know, and I understand. I mean, maybe they've gone through something in their background or something happened with their family or they saw something on social media or YouTube. You know, some religion made some comment about some social issue. And they're like, see right there, that's why I don't want those people in my life. I don't want anything to do with them. Which brings up the question, of course, like, who do I get to have in my life? Who do I allow to speak into my life? Who gets to tell me? Who gets to help me live my life? Which I'm going to sort of play my cards up front, has always been an issue for me. It's like, who gets to tell me what to do? You know, who gets to help me live my life? I've always struggled with that. My parents, teachers, coaches, bosses, relatives. And I've always been like this little attitude, like, who do you think you are to tell me how to live my life?
You know, I just always had a little bit of an issue with.
Isn't that cool how I can do that on demand? That's so neat. I've always had an issue with that. Like, who gets to tell me how to live my life? Who gets to help me live my life? Which can show up in a relationship that I have with God. Maybe shows up in your relationship with God. It's like, you know, does God get to tell me how to live my life? How does God help me live my life? Now, we're in this series, and in this series, there's these little sayings called Proverbs, and we've been saying that the Proverbs are really good for everybody. They're like little wise sayings, but they're most powerful when we connect it to a relationship with God. Grab your note sheet. I'm going to just read the theme to you before we get there. Proverbs are practical advice from a personal God. This is the theme of the whole series. Their purpose is to teach people to live disciplined and successful lives and to help them do what's right and just. So the idea is that the Proverbs are great, but what makes them different than fortune cookies or horoscopes or a crystal ball or anything like that is when the proverb is connected to having something personal with God. That's what really makes them powerful. And today we're talking about how that shows up in choice making. So right in your notes is the big idea. Smart people use a process to produce wise choices. For wisdom will enter your heart and knowledge will fill you with joy. Wise choices, circle that, will watch over you. And you know, there's a lot of different things I can use to make a choice. A lot of things I can base my choices on. I can base it on emotion. I can be swept away in a feeling and be impulsive, or some feeling can come over me and then I make a choice. Or I can use my personal history. I'm trying to figure out what to do, and I kind of look at, like, how I've done it before, how other people have done it before, how my family's done it before. Just ignore that. That's my alien self that's going to be with us, I guess, quite a bit today. So just pay attention as we go along. So, like, I can use my personal history. I can use history. I can just think, well, how did other people make the choice? How did people in my family make the choice? You know, how did, you know, like, what does... Like, what historically have people done when they've been in my situation? And then there's my high-risk ways that I sometimes make a choice. Sometimes I make a choice based on anger. So I'm really mad at somebody, or I'm mad about something, and you know, I'm angry about something, and then like it causes me to make a choice. Or I'm resentful and bitter towards someone, and I make a choice. I mean, there's lots of different ways to make a choice, lots of things to base a choice on. What we're saying today is the best way is to use a process. And that process is something God wants to be involved in. So let's jump in. We'll go right off the bat. Right, number one, ask God for guidance. People can plan what they want to do, but it is the Lord who guides their steps. So I think there's two reasons that people don't include God in, like, choice making, and they don't start to ask God things. Here's the first one right here. I think, like, it's those times that you don't want to hear what God has to say, so you don't ask him. I have a friend of mine. We go way, way back. We've known each other 40 years. We started following Jesus at the same time. He was at my wedding. I was in his wedding. And a ways back, he went through some really hard stuff, and part of it was a divorce, and things was happening in his family. And I saw him a while afterwards, and there was no communication between us during that time. I saw him a while afterwards, and he said, you know, during that time, you know, like, I didn't take your calls, and I didn't call you or anything. He said, the reason I didn't is because I didn't want to hear what you had to say. And he said, I knew what you were going to say about what I was going through, and I didn't want to hear what you had to say. And, you know, I kind of get that. I thought, well, you know, you know me. You know me for a long time. You probably could take a guess at what I was going to say. But you didn't know for sure what I was going to say. And you didn't know how I was going to say it. And I wonder sometimes, like, maybe God feels that way. Like, we take a guess at it. We're like, I ain't talking to you about this. You know, it's like, I know I'm not supposed to be living with this girl and having sex. I know what you're going to say about it, so I don't want to talk to you about it. And it's like, we kind of take a guess at it, but we're not like, is there anything you need to talk to God about, but you're not talking to God about it because you've already decided what God's going to say? Because I think that's one of the reasons we don't go ask him things. Is there anything you need to talk to him about? And would you be willing to, two things. Number one, know that it probably hurts his feelings, because I know my feelings were hurt that day. I was like, dang, that stings. And then secondly, give him a chance. Just give him a chance to speak for himself. And then number two, here's one too. I think this goes on a lot too. It's like, I don't want to talk to God about this because it's not important enough. Like, I'm trying to figure out if I should buy some new golf clubs, or I'm trying to figure out, you know, if I should get a tattoo, or should I leave my job? You're like, God's got big stuff to worry about. He doesn't want to know whether or not I should get new golf clubs. That's not a big enough thing to talk to God about. So we leave those things out, but the truth is most of our life is made of little and medium decisions and choices. And if we don't include him there, he's not involved in most of our life. I'm going to read you a scripture. It's not in your notes, but it'll come up behind me. The Lord will perfect that which concerns me. What concerns you right now? One thing I learned when I was, my kids were little and I was parenting them, it was like I really wanted to live in a way that they would include me in all the different areas of their life, and I was not able to do it because I am not perfect. So I know they had lots of things they were concerned about and going through that I never got to be a part of because of, you know, I wasn't perfect in the way I lived with them. But here's what God is saying in this scripture. And this is, he's saying, I'm perfect in how I can be with you. And whatever concerns you concerns me. It's like what I was hoping as a parent that, you know, all the gunky stuff that I went through as a teenager and everything that I never got to talk to anybody about because I was embarrassed or I wasn't sure what they would say. I was hoping I could be in some of that, and I surely was involved in some of it, but because of my own imperfections, I'm sure I wasn't involved in all of it. But now we have something different with God. He's saying, I'm perfect. I can be involved in all of that stuff, and I'll know exactly what to say and how to be with you. There's nothing too small. Nothing too insignificant, nothing too big, whatever you're going through, whatever you want to talk about, however gunky or sinful or wrong or selfish or like trite you think it is, here's the rule of thumb. Jot it in your notes. Here's the rule of thumb. Hear this. Whatever concerns me, this is just on the margin somewhere, whatever concerns me concerns God. I learned that with my kids because it wasn't like their problems or their stuff. That wasn't what it was about. It wasn't like I cared about their problems. I cared about them. Whatever concerns me concerns God. Talk to God. Number two, in the process, gather all the facts. So we're going through a process now, remember. And in this process, we're trying to figure out, like, God, here we go. You're with me in this whole thing. Number two, gather all the facts. Get the facts at any price and hold on tightly to all the good sense you can get. What it's saying is this, is that when I'm gathering the facts, sometimes I have to face facts that make me want to stop gathering the facts. It says hold tightly. Because here's what it is for me, as I go through the process to make a decision and a choice, and I start to gather the facts, it's like, I don't want to know anymore. Because the more facts I see, it seems to be leading towards a direction that I don't want to go. So it's saying as you gather the facts, it gets harder to gather the facts. Here's something right here, why it's so important to have God in my life. Sometimes I need God to be with me so I can face the facts. Because as I start to see the facts, I don't want to see the facts. Is there anything starting to come up in your life? You're starting to see it, you're seeing it, and you're like, oh, I don't want to see that. Great story about a man that was in India, and it was right after the microscope had been invented, and he had one, and he was shown to this other religious man in India, and this his religion didn't let him eat any meat. He couldn't do anything to animals, only vegetables. And so, like, he looked through the microscope, and he was looking at a piece of a vegetable in the microscope, and he saw all these little microscopic animals on the vegetable, and he's like, oh, I didn't realize I was eating those things. I was like, well, don't eat vegetables. You don't have to worry about it, but that's another thing. So anyways, so he's like, I don't, and I want to read you what happened. This is kind of an interesting way it says it. The religious leader, he was a leader of this religious group, wanted the microscope and said he was willing to pay for it, but the man was unwilling to sell it or give it away. Finally, the man decided to give the microscope to the religious leader, who immediately took it into the street and with a stone broke it into pieces. The man demanded a reason for his conduct. The religious leader answered, I have destroyed that microscope because I don't want to have 90 million people now happy with what they know, made miserable by what they don't know. What it's saying is I need God sometimes to help me face the facts. Number three, write in your notes. Ask for advice. Plans go wrong for lack of advice. Many advisors bring success. And let me read you another verse. This isn't in your notes, but I want to read it right here. Fools always think their own way is best. I could put my name in there. Robin always thinks his way is best. But wise people listen to what other people tell them. So this last week, I called Larry Abbott. I've known him all my life. He's run companies. He's like a really smart guy when it comes to money. And I've been getting all these offers to refinance my house. Your life is going to change. The best thing ever. Don't be an idiot. Refinance your house. So I called up Larry because I want to refinance my house because apparently, you know, you get all this money and they give it to you for free. And, you know, it's going to be great. Refinance your house. So I called up Larry. I said, Larry, I'm thinking of refinancing my house. I'm going to refinance my house, pull some money out, and, you know, and I'm going to refinance my house. And Larry said, don't do it. And I thought, you know, now I'm gathering facts. I'm hearing something I don't want to hear. He's like, don't do it. I said, but Larry, I got these great offers. I get to refinance my house. And I'm going to get all this money, and it's going to be super and everything. And then Larry, like, systematically explained to me why I shouldn't refinance my house. And he's known me long enough to know that if I'm not talking for 5 minutes on the phone, I'm not listening. So here's what Larry said to me. He said, I know you're going to do whatever you want to do, and you're not going to listen to me. Who's the advisors in your life? Who gets to tell you what to do? Who have you given an invitation to that can stop your parade? Larry's one of mine. I won't be refinancing my house. God bless you if you do. He just said, don't do it. In your situation, it's not a smart move. And Larry can stop my parade, and my parade was charging down the road. See, here's the thing I've had to admit, and this is like an important thing when it comes to making decisions, is just be able to admit, I have blind spots. And I need people in my life to advise me and talk with me and speak into my life. Who do you have? And if you don't have anybody in your life, I got a question for you. Why not? Okay, number four. Write in your notes. Establish a clear destination. It's a little hot in here, so if you want to, let's everybody stand up just for a second. Stretch a little bit. Commercial time. Stand up. Move around a little bit. Give somebody a high five. If you need to go get a drink of water, do it. It's going to be embarrassing to me if you fall asleep or if somebody falls asleep. So, like, don't do it. Like, stretch a little bit. Stand up. Move around. It's church today. The air conditioning is broken all the theaters, so that sucks, but that's the way it is. It's nice in the foyer. Too bad we can't have church out there. Stretch a little bit. Move around a little bit. All right, sit back down. Number four, establish a clear destination. An intelligent person aims at wise action, but a fool starts off in many directions. When's the last time you were somebody in a restaurant and they get the menu and the waitress comes over and they take forever? Like, well, I don't know if I want this or that, or can you tell me about this, or have you ever had that? Can you go over specials again for the 65th time? And how do they cook this? And they just go on and on. They can't make a decision. Finally, you know, like, could you go and give us more time? And then, like, they're so indecisive. Do you know part of maturity is being able to be decisive even if you're wrong? Because you need a destination. Because if you don't have a destination, you can't course correct. You can't even know what to do with feedback. You got to know where you say you're going to go to be able to do any adjustments to your life. Part of making decisions is knowing, hey, this is what I want the decision to cause. Might work in a restaurant, and that's okay. But in life, you have to pick a destination. The Jamaican bobsled, they made the cool movie about it, Cool Runnings. And there's this really neat little clip in there about this guy that had this destination he wanted to hit. It's kind of funny what he thought he was going to get. I'm going to win the gold medal bobsledding, and I'm going to hit this destination. And there's a truth in it, though, so I want you to see this little clip. Check it out.
Say whatever it is that you want, because you're just like every other fool on the island. You're going nowhere, Sanka. And you're thrilled to death about it. But you see me? You see me? I'm different. Because I know exactly where I'm going. And after I, Yul Brynner, win the Olympics and become famous, I'm going to leave the island and live right down there. What are you laughing about? What are you laughing about?
That's Buckingham Palace. You plan on living there, you're going to have to marry the Queen.
Yul, that's where the Queen of England lives.
Face it, Yul Brynner. You can start calling yourself Madonna, but you're still going to end up in an outhouse shanty like every other dock-working nobody.
It says who?
It says me, rich boy. What do you know about it?
Well, I know my father started off in a one-room hut. Now he lives in one of the biggest homes in Kingston.
Well, he ain't your father.
He doesn't have to be. All he has to do is know what he wants and work hard for it. And if he wants it bad enough, he'll get it. Look, believe me, Sanka, the more Yul Brynners we got making it in this world, the better off this world would be. Especially for Jamaicans. Go ahead, Yul Brynner. You go get your palace.
Yeah, that's so cool. That movie's not going to win an Academy Award, but that is a deep truth right there. And a few months ago, I had to face the exact same thing, because I think what happens is the reason we don't want to set the destination is we're afraid. Like, what's going to happen if I don't hit it? You know, especially what's going to happen if I say what I'd like to see happen and I tell other people that and I don't hit it. Like, I'm afraid of that. And a few months ago, I decided I'm going to take an entire day, and I'm going to go away, I'm going to pray, I need to find out, like, God, what's next for Eastlake? And so I did everything I could. I didn't eat, I fasted, got my best in the best place I could spiritually, spent the whole day with God praying. I said, God, what's the next thing for Eastlake Church? And he said to me, well, the next thing that Eastlake Church needs is a building. And I'm like, wow, awesome, God, that is super. He says, what I want you to do is tell all the people that the next thing you guys need to do is get a building. And I'm like, oh, I'm not doing that. It's like, God, I will look so dumb if I do that. I mean, I got a way better plan, God. You do a miracle and get us a building and I'll announce it. That's the part I want, God. I mean, I don't want to say something's going to happen before it happens, because then I'll have to walk in faith. And that's difficult for me. And I think a lot of times, like, the fear causes us to miss the faith. And here's why it's important to have a destination. Get this, please. Because the destination causes and draws the faith out of me that God can do something in my life. So I have to have a destination, because what the destination does is it calls me to have faith that something's going to happen, because I'm not going to be able to have it happen. It's like, God, you want me to stand up and tell everybody we're going to have a building? I mean, that's a big gap there, God, and I'm either going to be afraid and don't say it, or I'm going to walk in faith. So what is it you want to see occur but you haven't told anybody yet? What is it you want to see happen in your life and you haven't spoken it to anybody? You haven't even shared it with your spouse or your boyfriend or your girlfriend or anybody because you're afraid. It's like, I don't want to do that. You're missing out on faith. Because the destination will draw the faith out of you. Sorry. Let's go to the next one. Process, how to make right decisions. Choose the right path. Before every man, there is lies a wide and pleasant road and seems right, but ends in death. And I wanted to ask the question to you, do you think you're the exception to the rule when it comes to paths? This is what Andy Stanley said. I think it'll come up behind me. It might be in your notes. I can't remember. The direction you are currently traveling, relationally, financially, spiritually, and the list goes on, will determine where you end up in each of these respective areas. Paths. Now, a lot of people come to me from time to time, and they want to get together and talk about their problems. And the more I talk to them, I find out they don't have a problem. They have a direction issue because somewhere along the line, they've got on the wrong path. And whatever path you're on, it's going to take you to that destination. So at some point, you just settle down and you say to yourself, am I taking the right path to where I want to go? Because I have seen people quit jobs, move to other states, break up marriages, and like they take that path. And then later, they have all kinds of problems and they want to solve those problems. I'm like, these problems came on this path, bro. Just like if you get on 80 and you head west, there are certain cities you're going to go through. And if you don't want to go through those cities, don't get on that path. So part of it, when it comes to jobs and people and moving and all that stuff, is like, is that the path, God? It's such a simple prayer, man. Like you have a choice to make. You just go to God and just say, God, I'm going to look at this like an exit sign. And I got my blinker on. Do you want me to take this path or not? Then you find out, does he get to tell you how to live your life? Okay? Next one. Write in your notes. I'm going as fast as I can because I know it's hot. Be prepared. A prudent man foresees the difficulties ahead and prepares for them. The simpleton goes blindly on and suffers the consequences. And nobody says it better than this guy. Even if you don't like sports radio, Colin Cowherd, The Herd, here's what he's talking about now. Mike Tyson, heavyweight champion of the world, talking about preparation when he fought Evander Holyfield, and he kind of puts it in a synopsis. So I want you to see this clip right here. Check it out.
I remember hearing a story years ago about Mike Tyson, when people fought Mike Tyson. The way to beat Mike Tyson, who at the time was the most violent heavyweight in the history of the genre, you had to get him on his back of his feet. Because if Tyson came at you, you had to back him up like Holyfield. You had to back him up like Lennox Lewis. You had to back Mike up a little to take away some of the velocity. And I remember talking to a trainer about it. He said, you got to make your mind up 2 months before you find Mike Tyson that you're going to go through the most pain of your life and you cannot have any fear despite what you see he's done to other people. He goes, you beat Mike Tyson 2 months out. You don't beat Mike Tyson in the ring. You beat him 2 months out. Michael Spinks was scared. Evander Holyfield made up his mind 2 months out both times. I'm going right at him. And it's going to hurt. And it's going to be painful. It's the same decision you make with your kids at Disneyland. You know it's a schloid. And you decide we're all in. It's the decision you make with Tyson.
That's so cool. But you know why it's so cool? Because that happened 2 months out. Here's what Abraham Lincoln said. Give me 6 hours to chop down a tree and I'll spend the first 4 sharpening the axe. Here's the question. What should you be doing right now to prepare for the future that you say you want to have? Now here's my problem. I have enough just today to get through my day. My finish line is today. I put all my time and energy in just getting through today. I'm looking for the blue mountains at the end of the day on the Coors can. That's my day. It's like, hey, I got through the day. I put all my energy. I got through today. Today. No energy, no thought, didn't sharpen the axe at all for what I want to see happen in the future. And guess what? It's coming towards me. What are you supposed to be doing? What should you be doing right now to prepare for the future that you say that you want? And if you can't do it, well, then join the club. And that's why we need a savior. That's why these are better than fortune cookies and little sayings that go along. Because we look at them and we go, well, that's awesome, but I can't do that. I got my hands full just getting through this day here. How am I supposed to prepare? And that turns us to God. See, Christianity or Christ following, whatever you want to call it, only really makes sense and works if I do it with Christ. Or it's just a self-help thing, man. And you're on your own. Like all these proverbs and good ideas, this whole process is awesome. And most of it is undoable consistently unless we're empowered by God. And that's the last thing. Just write in your notes. Get started now. The lazy man is full of excuses. I can't go to work, he says. If I go outside, I might meet a lion in the street and be killed. I love this one. I can't go to work. There's fresh powder in the mountains or whatever it is. You know, it's just like, I can't do that. This is so crazy. It's an exaggeration. It's like speaking to me and saying, we will go so far to make excuses to not get started. It gets ridiculous. Like, I think I saw a lion. I better stay home. What's your excuse? What's my excuse? Now here's our prayer. We plan the way we want to live, but only God makes us able to live it.